Okay, thank you, Nick, for this kind introduction, and I want to thank you for this invitation. I want to thank all of you for being here. I have cherished this institution ever since I was an academic baby, and I'm very happy and excited to finally be here. And as Nick told, I'm going to be around all week, and today I want to focus on some recent work with me by me, Fernando Brandao, and Daniel Stelkranka about quantum speedups for semi-definite programming and more generally convex optimization. And I think this is an exciting new field of research, and there's still a lot of ground to uncover. And okay, for those of you who visited the IQC workshop last week, there's going to be considerable overlap because Daniel was already talking about this topic, but I think this might still be a different take on the problem. And so here's a brief outline of my talk. I want to start with a motivation, and I want to start really, really broadly about what is an optimization problem, what classes of optimization problems are interesting, and what classes of optimization problems we are going to consider. And then I will formulate the problem. And throughout this talk, I hope this is okay, I will focus on the optimization aspects and will try to give you an intuitive understanding what is going on behind these solvers. I will be a bit more quick when it comes to quantum information ideas, because I do think that most of you will probably know what a Gibbs state is and have some intuition about the geometry of quantum states, whereas I'm not so sure if you know the current trends in optimization theory regarding, for instance, matrix multiplicative weights. So I want to emphasize the things that might be less familiar to you in order to hopefully guide you to the frontier. And so, yeah, I will discuss the big part of this project is a new meta algorithm that will allow us to solve certain classes of the optimization problems. And this meta algorithm is actually fully classical. And then we can try to implement it either on a classical device or on a quantum device. And we will see that the quantum device will be more powerful. So this is the big part of my talk, the meta algorithm. And in the runtime analysis, we will do exactly what I just mentioned. We will see how can we implement that on a classical computer and how can we do it on a quantum computer. And then I want to, of course, conclude, point you maybe towards the most important aspects of this work, some important follow-up work, and I will also tell you what I'm interested in general, because I'm going to be around all week. Okay? I have 1 hour, is this correct? Okay, perfect. So let me give a very broad motivation, which might be a bit skewed, but a lot of us are working on prospective quantum computers, and we believe that quantum computers can really provide advantages for certain routines in science, but also in society in general. So I would like to review maybe some of the most important and promising applications of a potential quantum device. And one of the most important aspects of this theory goes back to Feynman, who proposed to use quantum computers to simulate quantum theories and learn something about nature on the microscopic scale. So the idea here is to have a quantum device in order to increase our knowledge about quantum systems. And this has huge potential applications, namely ab initio quantum chemistry, if you wanna build more drugs. But people like John Preskill also have proposed to use quantum computers to simulate field theories, to learn something new about the universe. And important subroutines have received a lot of attention in our field, and one of them I want to highlight is how to prepare Gibbs states, thermal states associated with a Hamiltonian, effectively and efficiently on a quantum device. So this is one trajectory, quantum computing to understand quantum mechanics better. But this is not all we have. Shaw, in his seminal work, proposed to use a quantum device to solve a fully classical problem that we believe to be hard. Namely, for example, how to solve discrete logarithm or how to factor large numbers. And this is actually very, very important in real-world applications because it directly addresses some of the most prominent encryption schemes we use today. So like these are two very big things. And then in addition to that, some of you also probably worked or know about Grover, who told us how to use quantum devices to efficiently search databases. That's also a potential application and an important subroutine that often allows us to get quantum speedups for problems where database search is a subroutine. And now I would like to challenge you and ask you if you know of more quantum algorithms or more quantum applications than the three I put in there. So quantum mechanics, quantum information theory, in particular in quantum computing, is now 20 years old. And I would dare say that this rough list is almost an exhaustive list of the problems we can address now. And this is why I find this new development very, very exciting. Only 2 years ago, Fernando Brandão and Christa Svoor, then at Microsoft, put an additional entry to that list. They showed that you can use quantum mechanical devices to speed up optimization problems. And optimization problems have a huge variety and range of applications, and I find it really exciting. Also, most of them are classical, that we, quantum computing people, can now say something about optimization as well. And this is the core topic of my talk today. I want to explain to you how these new algorithms actually work. And the key idea, so what Fernando Brandão and Christa Svoor in their first paper showed, that they could get speedups for linear programming. It's a subroutine of optimization and certain, admittedly rather exotic, classes of semidefinite programs. I will tell you later on what a semidefinite program is. And the actual content of my talk and the result I'm going to explain here is that we found a different algorithm that allows us to solve a certain subclass of these problems very efficiently. And this subclass of SDP relaxations, that's the name, wasn't covered by existing algorithms. These algorithms depended on problem-specific parameters that scale particularly poorly for combinatorial-like optimization problems. And this is where we wanted to get an improvement, because this is really a big thing in theoretical computer science and applications. And so the algorithm I'm going to explain to you today is different from the original one for quantum SDP solvers, and it addresses important problems like convex relaxations of max cut. You've probably heard of that problem. You can do community detection and, for example, also some problems in numerical linear algebra. So this is the topic of today's talk. And the overarching idea, which is really inspiring by Fernando Brandão and Christa Svoor, is to not come up with a fully quantum algorithm. So Shor's algorithm is a fully quantum algorithm from beginning to end. But what Christa Svoor and Fernando Brandão envisioned is a smart classical algorithm, a classical machine that outsources certain subroutines that are expensive to do on a classical device to a quantum device. And we will actually use the fact that quantum mechanical architectures can excel at simulating certain quantum systems. In our case, it will be Gibbs states, to boost up this hybrid procedure. So the idea is to come up with a smart, quantum-inspired classical algorithm that, where the most complicated subroutine resembles the computation of a Gibbs state, and then you outsource this computation to a quantum computer. And by combining this, you can get rigorous speedups for important classes of optimization problems. And this is what I try to convey to you today. Okay? So the problem I want to talk about is convex optimization. So before I tell you what a convex optimization problem is, let's just look at optimization problems in general. You have a variable x, for instance, a vector or a matrix in an abstract space, and you have a function of that variable, f of x, and you want to optimize it. I chose to maximize this function subject to certain constraints. And the constraints are typically that the variable x cannot range freely. It is confined to a subregion of this abstract space. So a concrete example would be, for instance, to maximize a linear function, subject to your point has to lie in a certain manifold or a certain hyperplane. Okay? And such optimization problems can be basically as hard as you want them to be. If the function f is not very structured and has a lot of local optima, then it is very, very difficult to solve these problems. But there's a particularly nice class of optimization problems where we can say that they should be easy to solve. And these are so-called convex optimization problems. And the important feature of a convex optimization problem is twofold. First, the function we optimize, f, must be a nice function. And for optimization, what is a nice function? It's functions that are either convex or concave. Because these properties ensure, if the function is concave and I want to optimize it, then concavity tells me that there is no local minima or local maxima in this case where I can get stuck. So there's really one global optimum, and this is good news for optimization. So a convex optimization problem requires a nice simple function f. Now, it doesn't have to be simple, but it shouldn't have local optima. And the constraint set also has to be nice. So the way I wrote it, the constraint is that this abstract variable x has to lie in the intersection of sets that are also convex. And a convex set, naively, is a set where I can draw a line between any two points. And this kind of concavity of the objective function tells you you can't get stuck in local maxima. And convexity of the feasible region, the set that you can traverse, implies that there's no weird directions where you can, where like your manifold pops out and where you could get stuck. So both together tell you that you have a nice problem that is hopefully solvable on a classical computer in efficient time. So it's really just regularity conditions. And you can actually show that if these regularity conditions hold, if our optimization problem is convex, then it is computationally tractable because we can't get stuck at bad points. And this computational tractability, you should take that with a grain of salt. That's a theoretical result that tells you that you can solve this problem in polynomial time. But existing general purpose solvers that achieve that are typically slow. And I mean slow in a practical sense. So the dimensional dependence, if X, for instance, is an n by n matrix, and I want to solve a semi-definite program, then I can use standard solvers like CVX. But maybe you've seen from your own experience that if the matrix dimension is larger than 100, then these things really become slow. And it's an issue in the polynomial scaling and in the storage you need. And so this is the problem we want to tackle. We want to look at convex optimization problems, and we want to find faster algorithms on how to solve them. And so the end goal is a bit different than in Shor's algorithm, where we don't know a classical approach, but Shor's algorithm tells us that we can factor efficiently for quantum with quantum computers. But what we have is an efficient problem to begin with, but the problem is slow. So we maybe have a dimensional scaling n to the 6 or something, which is actively killing us, and we want to improve that to maybe n to the 2, n to the power of 2. So that's the scope of our work. And in order to become even more concrete, I want to consider a certain class of optimization problems where I have a matrix A, that's the defining parameter of my problem, and the task is simply to compute the largest inner product or overlap with a vector that is constrained to have plus or minus one signs. You can quickly check. You can see that.
Is there real no constraints on A?
There's no, A is the problem description.
But if A is real or,
A is going to be real. Okay. It's a real n by n matrix. Good point, thank you. And this is the only restriction, and problems of this form occur in a lot of different places. Maybe those, exactly. Maybe the physicists among you might be able to see that I hit an easing problem in there, or like a spin glass problem, because these plus minus ones, the entries of X, could be configurations of a classical spin on a 1D chain. And A could be proportional to minus a Hamiltonian. And if I put in the minus sign, then maximizing this expression is the same as minimizing minus it. And so the question is find the ground state of an easing model. Sherrington Kirkpatrick models and spin glasses are a variant thereof, where you typically assume that your matrix A is random. So this is an important quantum application of this problem. I live in the US now, and so community detection is an interesting other variant thereof, which is more in data analysis and data science. The US is more polarized than ever. So there's Democrats and then there's Republicans. And an interesting problem, for instance, would be to look at the connectivity network of Facebook amongst all Americans. Then you might envision that Republicans might tend to have Republican friends and Democrats have probably Democrat friends. And then you could ask yourself if A is the adjacency matrix of the big Facebook connectivity network among friends in the US, can I find the two groups? Can I distinguish Democrats from Republicans? And if we want to do that, we could interpret this vector X in a different fashion, where we assign a value plus one to an individual user in the network if he is associated to Democrats, and a minus one if he's associated to Republicans. And the problem now corresponds to finding an optimal bipartition of this network. So that's a fully classical application of such a problem. And another one that should send down shivers your spine is that you can also encode max cut, the problem of finding the largest cut of a graph in this fashion. And the idea here is just to associate, similar to the community detection protocol, to associate a cut, which is a bipartition of the graph, with a binary vector where you say it's plus one if my vertex is in this partition, and it's minus one if it's in the other. And this should sound certain alarm bells, because max cut is known to be not an easy problem. So problems of this form are NP-hard to solve in the worst case. And heuristically, you can see that with this problem description already, because we want to maximize something that is quadratic, but we have exponentially many binary vectors to check. And so naively, you will guess that this might require exponentially long time to do. And max cut, the fact that you can rephrase max cut in this form, tells you, in a vague sense, that in the worst case, this is the best thing you can do. And so this is an important problem, but it's also a difficult one. And so what people came up with is a so-called relaxation of the problem. So we start with the difficult problem from the last slide, where I just slightly rewrote the objective function as using a cat-bra trick, actually. So I think I don't have to explain it here. And this is the problem we start with. And because max cut is contained in here, I'm not very confident that I can solve this problem. And one promising direction of work.
So the metric A is not negative definite, it's not convex, right? It's not concave.
No, the problem is not, the matrix is not the problem. This, if this matrix is even were negative definite, which is the nice case, then this would be a concave function. The problem is the constraint set. Like, there's instances of the matrix A where the objective function is nice, but the constraint set is just a number of discrete points. There's no nice convex structure. And this is the this makes the problem difficult. Does this answer your question? Exactly. Very good. Thanks. This is actually probably good for didactic purposes anyway. So we have like a function that we want to maximize, and we have this weird constraint set. And I don't know how to do that, so I slightly rewrite my problem. I kind of introduce a big capital letter X and replace my outer product X, X star adjoint by this matrix. Just a trick, a reformulation trick. And then the objective function looks much, much nicer. It's now linear in the matrix X. And now I can look a bit at the constraint set, which tells me that my vectors can only have plus or minus one entries. If I now take a vector of this form and multiply it with its transpose, then I get a rank one matrix, and it has a special feature, namely the entries at the diagonal are always plus one, because the phases cancel. So I can write that as a constraint. The diagonal of this matrix has to be equal to one, and then with my rewriting trick, I rewrote a rank one projector as a matrix, and outer products of vectors with themselves are always positive semidefinite. So I include this constraint as well. And then the last constraint I need to fully convert this problem into the new notation is I also have to impose the constraint that my matrix is actually rank one. But this is a hard constraint. This is the non-convex constraint. This is what makes the problem difficult. And the idea of convex relaxations is simply kick out the bad constraint. Just forget about it. Because if I do so, I get a problem, I get a matrix value problem that actually looks nice. But I somehow made the feasible set a bit larger because I got rid of one constraint. And maybe you remember that I had this simplex, this polytope on the last slide. This will correspond to the actual feasible set. And in this relaxation, the feasible set becomes a bit larger. But maybe not that much. But the idea of this entire thing is to start with a problem that seems difficult and transform it into something that has still similar structure, but is actually tractable. And as you can probably check for yourself quickly, this problem is actually a nice convex problem because the optimization function is linear. There's a really nice function. It's both convex and concave. And the constraint set is actually a combination of two constraints. One of them is the one that tells me the diagonal entries have to be equal to one. This is a nice affine subspace in my space of matrices. And the second constraint is that my matrix has to be positive semidefinite. And you can check very easily that this is actually a convex set that also has the structure of a convex cone. And so the entire problem is a nice convex optimization problem, and it's actually a semi-definite program because the defining constraint, the difficult constraint, is positive semi-definiteness, and everything else is linear. Okay, that's the idea of a convex relaxation. You take a difficult problem and you replace it with a related simpler problem. Then you solve the simpler problem, and then ideally, fingers crossed, you learn something about the difficult problem as well. So, and problems of this form are called semi-definite programming relaxations of binary quadratic optimization. And this is exactly the problem I want to focus on during this talk. So we want to maximize the trace inner product of an unknown matrix X with a matrix A, subject to the diagonal of the matrix has to be equal to 1. And the matrix has to be positive semi-definite. And here I included a superfluous constraint, because if every diagonal element has to be equal to 1, the trace is set to 0, to n. And now maybe I don't like this problem so much yet. I'll just rescale it. I changed the parameters. So kind of in the objective function, for some reasons that should become clear very soon, I divide the objective matrix A by its operator norm to make sure that it looks a bit like a measurement in quantum mechanics. And I replace the matrix X by 1 over the dimension times the matrix X. And why do I want that? Because then the trace constraint, trace equal to n constraint, becomes trace of X has to be equal to 1. And now this problem should start to look familiar for you, because we want to optimize something that looks like an expectation value or an observable, subject to something that is just linear constraints. And the weird exotic constraint is that the trace of our matrix has to be equal to 1, and the matrix has to be positive semi-definite. And I think us people in this room and quantum information theorists in general are pretty good at understanding the last constraint. So X just has to be a quantum state. And we want to use this quantum intuition and the fact that the difficult constraint is actually just a constraint that we have a quantum state in order to develop a new meta-algorithm, a new algorithm technique that exploits these features in order to get a fast solution, okay? And this meta-algorithm, we will derive this meta-algorithm in 3 steps. The first one is a standard trick in computer science, where we'll be able to replace the optimization aspect of our problem, maximize something, by a selection of yes or no questions. Does a solution with this value exist? And this will allow us to reduce the problem of optimizing a function to the problem of checking whether a feasible point with a certain function value exists. So we can mod out the optimization aspects. And then the second step, I hopefully have alluded to that already, is we'll use our quantum intuition to just do a change of variables that will take care of the complicated constraint. And then we'll find an iterative algorithm that will try to find a point that meets all the constraints of our problem. And then we run this iterative algorithm long enough, and we will show that we converge. And in the end, when we do the analysis, we'll see that this physics-inspired approach is going to be quicker than most of the classical algorithms we know today. And because it's quantum inspired, we will subsequently be able to use quantum architectures as subroutines. So here, let me start with phase one. We want to get rid of the optimization aspect of the problem. So we want to reduce the optimization problem to something that is called a feasibility problem. And yeah, this is basically just what I said. We want to get rid of the optimization aspect. Then we want to develop a quantum-inspired classical algorithm. And then we want to plug in a quantum boost that will let us do certain subroutines quicker. And just for those of you who actually do have a background in optimization theory, the inspiration we have is matrix multiplicative weights by Aurora and Kale and mirror descent by Nesterov and Nemirovsky. So what do I mean by get rid of the optimization aspect? So our objective function, this is very important, is a linear function. And I've renormalized the problem matrix. And the reason why I did that is I can show now by just applying a Holder inequality that the objective value for any quantum state is an absolute value always bounded by one. It's a simple computation that you can do, but the constraint that we always have to optimize over quantum states tells us that the thing that I'm looking for is always in the interval minus 1 to 1. And the function I want to optimize is linear. And now there's actually a very famous trick that is pretty simple that allows us to reduce the task of actually optimizing f of x to a collection of of binary questions. I don't know, maybe you know this stupid children's game where one kid thinks of a number and the other kid has to guess what that number is. And there's a very, very effective algorithm for doing that. You just ask, is my number smaller or equal than this? And if he says yes, you kind of have an interval and you split it in half and you ask the question again. And this allows you to nail down the value of the number you have to guess, and you actually converge exponentially quickly. This trick is called binary search. And the idea is, instead of optimizing f of x directly, I want to create a machine, the other kid in my game, that tells me, if I choose a value lambda between minus 1 and 1, that tells me, is there any matrix that obeys my constraints, and such that the function value is smaller or equal than lambda. And if I can implement such a yes-no machine, I can query it a couple of times, use this binary search idea to nail down the actual optimum value of the function. So this is the first important conceptual step. Rather than trying to optimize this linear function, I really design an auxiliary machine that allows me to check whether a matrix with a function value smaller or equal than lambda exists. And the beauty of binary search will tell me, if I have such a machine, I only have to query it log 1 over the accuracy I desire many times in order to nail down the actual solution of my optimization problem. Okay? And here I've introduced some computer science notation. This big O notation might be familiar to you, but this is an even more cruder version thereof, where I also suppress logarithmic factors in the dimension and actually polynomial factors in the accuracy. Okay? So this, you can read this as a definition. In this tilde notion, I don't care about accuracy scaling and logarithmic factors. So this is phase one. And now we have to build such a yes-no machine. So what we actually have to find is a machine. We have our problem description. Let me introduce the shorthand notation A tilde for the normalized problem matrix. We now have a question, a parameter lambda in a unit interval that we want to query. And the subroutine we have to solve is we have to find a matrix that satisfies the original constraint that the diagonals all have to be equal to 1 over the dimension, that satisfies this quantum state constraint, and that has this new defining property of my machine, namely that the trace inner product, this is the objective function on the left, has to be smaller or equal than lambda. Okay? And the magic of binary search tells me if I can find a machine that does that, I can query it very few times and actually solve the original optimization problem. So this trick allowed me to replace the optimization with an additional linear constraint. And now this is the problem that I actually want to solve. And the constraints are geometrically actually nice. The new lambda constraint is geometrically just a half space in matrix space. It's a linear constraint. The second constraint singles out an affine subspace. And the last constraint just claims that X has to be a density matrix. And if you look at these constraints, the last one should actually be the scariest, because positive semi-definiteness is not such an easy concept. But we know quantum mechanics, we know quantum theory, and so I propose a typical physicist solution to this problem. Let's do a change of variables. Instead of writing X, I write it as an exponential of a matrix H, and I have to divide it by the trace of this exponential in order to assure that this matrix has trace 1. And you can quickly check that matrix exponentials are always positive semi-definite. And by construction, the trace is always equal to 1. So I can write any matrix of this form, at least in the limit, every quantum state, as a Gibbs state, matrix exponential, of a certain Hamiltonian. So the idea of solving this binary problem is, let's do a change of variables and replace x by a Gibbs state, and then look at Hamiltonians. Because this change of variables takes care of the most complicated constraint of them. Okay? So this is the second important step, a quantum-inspired change of variables. And so with this change of variables, I nailed down the most complicated constraint, actually. And the resulting problem, if I phrase it for the Hamiltonian that I'm now looking for, looks simpler. I have to find a Hamiltonian H subject to that the associated Gibbs state must have a trace inner product with the problem matrix that is smaller or equal than lambda. And the Gibbs state must have 1 over n on the diagonal. Okay, so far just a change of variables. But now this is something we can actually work with. We could, and this is what we did, in order to solve this problem, we can start with a fixed point, with a starting point that is particularly simple. In this case, we just start at infinite temperature. If the matrix H is 0, the associated Gibbs state is the maximally mixed state, and the maximally mixed state actually obeys the second constraint. So let's just start at infinite temperature, but then we can ask ourselves, yeah, well, the maximally mixed state maybe doesn't obey the first constraint, so let's check that. And if it actually obeys the first constraint as well, we found a feasible point. We can output yes. Our question machine can output yes. Yes, there is a point that satisfies all the constraints and whose function value is smaller or equal than lambda. And if it's not, let's just update the Hamiltonian. Let's update the Hamiltonian in a way that penalizes the violation of these constraints. Because intuitively, the actual state rho is a matrix exponential of minus something. And if it is too big, if its contributions in a certain direction here are too large, then I can penalize these directions in the exponent, and these directions should get suppressed. This is the entire idea, and we called this algorithm Hamiltonian updates, because we really just started infinite temperature. We look how good are we doing regarding this problem. If we found a feasible point, we're done. This is good. And if we are not done, we penalize infeasible directions by updating the Hamiltonian. And yeah, because it has to be an algorithm, I have to make sure that this doesn't go on forever. I can repeat this step many, many times, but I have to set a cutoff, because otherwise it could be that my machine runs forever. Okay? So this is the overall idea. I kind of like pictures in order to visualize it. Suppose that this is our problem. The big circle is the set of positive semidefinite matrices, and I've hard-coded this as a constraint because I went from matrices to Gibbs states and Hamiltonians. So every matrix after my change of variables is positive semidefinite. And now inside, we are now looking for a point that is in the intersection of two sets, 1/2 space, in a fashion similar to the problem that we already have to solve, actually. And one is a bit more complicated, it's this diamond-shaped region. And I'm at a certain point, maybe this is the maximally mixed state, and now I want to get a point in the intersection. What do we do? Well, we first check, are we in the intersection or is there a constraint that is violated? It's easy to see, we are not in a blue set, so we are not there yet. So we find a separating hyperplane that this is a convex set, this is a point. If a point is not in a convex set, I can always find a separating hyperplane that is kind of a witness of the violation of the constraint that I have. And this, I call this P. And now I update my Hamiltonian to penalize this direction. And what will happen is, this direction will get suppressed and I will jump. And now I hopefully obey the second constraint, but then I kind of left the first convex set. So I'm still not there. So I do the same thing. I try to find a separating hyperplane. Yes?
How do you find this hyperplane?
We'll do that later. That's where kind of the tricks come in.
Yeah.
But the big idea is kind of for every convex set, there's a separating hyperplane. Try to find that, add it to your Hamiltonian, and go on. So yeah, I do this, and then maybe I jump again. Still not quite there, but I got closer. And now I keep going. And at some point, hopefully, this heuristics tells me that I should get into the intersection. Yes?
Are you guaranteed to end up in the intersection?
Next slide. Very good. Very good question. So far, this is just a physics-inspired intuition. But the nice thing about this intuition is that we can actually prove it.
And how do you choose the step?
The step size.
Right. I mean, like, how long do you work for one step?
Next slide, okay. Theoretical result. It's actually, we were quite surprised. But this simple heuristic is more powerful than you might think. So yeah, this is actually the entire idea of this quantum-inspired meta-algorithm. And you can probably already see we always update Hamiltonians, and we have to query Gibbs states. So maybe quantum simulation techniques for Gibbs states will help us to speed that up. So that's the idea where we want to go. But for now,
yes. One more question. So you start with the highest possible entropy state,
yes.
Right? Well, you could start with something
no.
sort of
yes, I could.
Better,
yes.
Right? In that sense. I mean, you want to have something that has rank one in principle, but you throw that
yes.
constraint out, but you start with something that is.
Can I defer that
yeah.
question to the actual theorem? Because we need that state.
Oh.
It's you're right.
You need to start with that completely.
Yeah, in order to get a convergent guarantee.
Oh, okay.
It's,
so you can go in and out
yes,
directions.
Yes.
Okay.
But you're right. Intuitively, I should start somewhere else.
Okay.
So yeah, and here's the theorem that we proved. And this hopefully answers several of the questions at once. We could show that this simple heuristics either finds a point in the intersection after logarithmically many steps. And if this is not the case, there is no point in the intersection. So I run this Hamiltonian updates procedure for logarithmically many steps, and it will always give me an answer to my binary question machine. It will either find a point that is in the intersection or almost there, or if the algorithm doesn't converge, I can for sure say the intersection is empty. And the proof technique behind it is very much inspired by quantum info, and it relies on the fact that we start with a maximally mixed state. Because the argument works by contradiction. The difficult part of this algorithm is to assure that we only need logarithmically many steps to either find a state or rule out its existence. So let's assume that there is a feasible point. The intersection is not empty. And because I start with the maximally mixed state, I can assure that the quantum relative entropy between my first point, the point I start with, and the point where I want to go, is smaller or equal than the log of the dimension. It's just a general fact, yes?
And you're not assuming that your intersection is, measure zero?
No. This is kind of like, no, this argument is completely general. So, the idea is really, suppose that a feasible state exists and its relative entropy with the starting state is bounded because we start with the maximally mixed state. With the rank one state, I would already get problems here. And now the quantum relative entropy is actually a good distance measure for the set of quantum states. And what we now do is to show that with each update of our Hamiltonian updates, we make constant progress in relative entropy. This is the tricky part. So we show that at each step of the iteration, we make constant progress in terms of quantum relative entropy. And this is a distance measure. The proof is very much like a standard iterative algorithm. I prove that with each step, I make progress. And if I start finitely many, a finitely amount away from this state, I'm guaranteed to converge. And now, because the original relative entropy distance is bounded by log n, two things can happen. Either I converge after at most of t steps, but if this is not the case, my relative entropy becomes negative. And quantum relative entropy can never be negative. And this contradicts the assumption that a state exists in the intersection. So this is the proof that our machine and that Hamiltonian updates actually works. And for those optimization enthusiasts around there, this proof strategy is very similar to mirror descent with a von Neumann, Neumann entropy potential. So these ideas were out there, but our proof is still new. Okay? So this is cool, because it tells us that these Hamiltonian updates only require logarithmically many steps to solve our yes-no question, And the yes-no question trick, binary search, allowed us to solve the original optimization problem with only a log overhead. So we are still pretty cheap. But let's do a naive resource count now. What is the most demanding resource in this entire algorithm? So like at each step of our Hamiltonian updates, we have to compute a Gibbs state, because that's the actual state we're in, and we have to check feasibility constraints there. And then for the Gibbs state, we have to check whether the objective function is smaller or equal than lambda. And if this is not the case, we have to output a separating hyperplane. For this constraint, the separating hyperplane is just a matrix itself. It's really just a half space normal vector. And the second thing is we also have to check that the diagonal constraints are one over the dimension or close. And if this is not the case, we have to find a separating hyperplane. And a good separating hyperplane is actually I just check all the diagonal entries, and I take kind of whenever I'm larger than where I want to be, I put a one there. And then this is going to be an orthogonal projector, which is a separating hyperplane for the diagonal set. So these are the three subroutines we have to compute. Quick group question, which one is the most expensive? Probably not the second one. And it's probably not the third one. But computing matrix exponentials is pretty difficult classically. Because naively, you have to do an eigenvalue decomposition if you don't have additional structure. And then it can exponentiate the eigenvectors, eigenvalues. But eigenvalue decomposition is expensive. So the first step, actually computing the Gibbs state, is the resource demanding one, naively. The second step can be done pretty efficiently in times n times s, where s is the sparsity of our problem description. It's probably easy to see that if my I tilde has a lot of zeros, then I can do that quicker. And the last cost is just check diagonal entries, linear time. But if I combine all of that, I have a naive total cost that scales with n to the power of 4 times s. Not so impressive yet. I mean, still better than general purpose solvers, but this is nothing to write home about. So we have to think about whether we can improve our techniques in order to get something that is actually quicker. And here another important design factor comes to play. This Hamiltonian updates rule that I told you is geometrically very robust. This shouldn't come as a surprise for you, but if I only compute the separating hyperplanes approximately, then I'm still doing approximately the right thing. And you can actually make this rigorous, and the method is robust enough to assure that if we implement all the subroutines in a dirty fashion, we will still get approximately there where we want to. And we can use this classically, where, remember, the big bottleneck was to compute matrix exponentials. The most naive speedup I can do is I write down a Taylor series and cut it off after only logarithmically many steps. And you can show that this dirty implementation of a matrix exponential is actually good enough. And if you do that, you get our first main result. With this dirty implementation of the matrix exponential, you can actually find an approximate point. You're a bit dirty, so you can't get the point exactly, but you get really close. And the number, the runtime you need, the classical resources, is now only n squared s times a log factor in the dimension. Because it's a dirty solution, we lose in the accuracy. It's a really terrible accuracy scaling, I should confess. But this is unfortunately a general feature of these fast methods. So also the best existing classical approaches don't scale so well in accuracy, but we do even more poorly. That's important for future work. But if we just care about dimensionality, we now have a scaling that is only n squared times s. And how did we achieve that? There was one expensive step, namely computing Gibbs states, and we just did a dirty implementation of that. And this actually compares favorable to the best existing classical results in the literature. So already this quantum-inspired meta-algorithm, fully classically, gives us a speed up over the best existing techniques. But you have to be a bit careful when it comes to approximations and accuracy. I don't want to go into details, but I mean, I introduced errors in the problem, and so I have to like look at the approximation ratio. And when you want to compare approximation ratios with the literature, then you have to combine different norms. Yes?
Any other problem with the big O constant?
Pardon?
When you compare these two performances, What about the constants?
I think so. I think we are still doing more poorly in the accuracy, but the epsilon accuracy in the accuracy scaling of the runtime, but the actual approximation accuracy of existing works is epsilon, the accuracy, times the dimension times the operator norm. And what we get is epsilon times the L1 norm of the matrix. And these two things are in general incomparable. But for a random matrix, for random problem instances, the right-hand scaling of us is actually better. Okay. And yeah, I should also point out, unfortunately, this doesn't nail down the MaxCut case yet, because MaxCut as a problem has a lot of additional structure that can be exploited, and there's specifically designed problems, classical algorithms that are still better. But already the classical implementation gives us a faster runtime for this general problem instances of this kind. But let's see how Quantum can help us actually, because this will be able to boost us further. As I pointed out several times now, the classical bottleneck is really how to compute Gibbs states. You have to do eigenvalue decompositions or rough approximations, and this is always costly or introduces a lot of errors. Now, fortunately, in our community, just the sub problem now of computing a Gibbs state of a Hamiltonian has a long and rich history. Very smart people have worked long times to find up very good quantum routines that solve this problem. And the last design feature of our algorithm was that we can now simply buy. We can simply import them. And rather than computing the matrix exponential on a computer, we just let a quantum computer input the Hamiltonian and let the quantum computer compute the Gibbs state. And in order to check the constraints, we sample from this distribution. And we sample sufficiently often so we can reliably check whether the Gibbs state is feasible or not. And we can also find separating hyperplanes. That's the entire idea. That's really the final step. And exactly. You prepare copies of the current Gibbs state on a quantum computer. And then you can use phase estimation to check the first constraint. And you can just measure the computational basis to get an idea about how the diagonal distribution looks like. And if you do that, you get a further speed up over the classical result from last slide. So this scaling is now n to the 1.5 rather than n to the 2. And you kind of, the scaling in the sparsity also becomes better. So this beats the best existing classical runtime and our classical runtime. And I really also want to emphasize that this is the first quantum speed up for this kind of problems. The existing results scale very, very poorly for binary quadratic optimization and were utterly useless. But this new algorithm does it. And finally, if you actually want to do something with your solution, just by construction, we always keep classically track of the Hamiltonian that gets better each time. So once the computation is concluded, I have a classical description of the Hamiltonian that implements the optimal solution to the problem. And
so when you say you prepare the thermal states, are you assuming that the thermal states are like of a particular, are they completely general?
Hmm?
Or are they like completely general, or are they like a subset of the thermal state of all the possible?
These?
Yeah.
Well, very good.
Okay.
Last important design feature, our Hamiltonians are very structured. The Hamiltonians are not structured the way that physicists usually like to think about them, but because our separating hyperplanes were either the problem matrix itself or something that is diagonal, the entire Hamiltonian is always a sum of this problem matrix plus something that is diagonal. And because Hamiltonian updates converges so quickly, the temperature always scales nicely. Because at each step, I either update like the problem matrix A with a small bit or a diagonal matrix, and I only do this log n many times. Temperature can never get really low. And with such a structure, we did a typical Fernando Brandão proof, did a search in literature, he knew all the results, and we put four important auxiliary results together in order to show that you can really implement these Gibbs states very efficiently.
So these are not, so A tilde is kind of random in principle,
yes.
Or is this often just an adjacency matrix?
It could be.
Because is alpha and beta, because I'm thinking about whether some of these Hamiltonians are stochastic, because then there's other classes.
Yes, exactly.
Ways.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, because then alpha has to be, you know,
yes.
This alpha A tilde, if it's an adjacency matrix,
yes.
It has negative. Then.
Yes. This is actually one of the problems where that you should think about. But
then there's also classical ways of doing it, although
yes,
there's no convergence.
I'm fully aware of that. Like, this is just like the first try of this new meta-algorithm where we just didn't assume too much about A tilde.
Yeah.
But now we try to get the word out, and maybe you can improve this much, much further by just looking at this subroutine. This was the idea. So, okay. And with that, I'm actually at the end of my talk. This is all I wanted to tell you. So kind of, again, what was our big quest? We wanted to look at an important optimization problem class. And what we found is semi-definite relaxations of binary quadratic optimization. And we had two reasons to look at those. First of all, they have an intricate combinatorial structure that meant that existing quantum speedups for convex optimization couldn't be applied to this problem class. The scaling was just too poorly. And secondly, classical theoretical computer scientists really care about these sorts of problems. They work hard to find good algorithms for that, and we tried to beat them in their own field. And this is why we chose this type of algorithm. And we came up with a heuristic that we called Hamiltonian updates, and it's a four-step procedure. We replaced first the optimization part by a sequence of feasibility problems, yes-no questions. And then we implemented the yes-no routine by first using a change of variables that went from matrices to Gibbs states. And then we iteratively update the Hamiltonian H in order to penalize bad directions that are not feasible in a very, very linear fashion. And finally, we proved that there's strong convergence guarantees for that. And in a final step, the most expensive part of this algorithm is to compute the Gibbs states. And we boosted the runtime by preparing such matrices on a quantum computer and do the readout via measurement. And the result is this provably converges, and we obtain approximate solutions that are faster to get than existing approaches, at least in a general setting. We got actually a classical improvement, and then we further improved over that by preparing the Gibbs states on a quantum computer. Okay, having said this, here is an outlook slide. There's many open problems, and one of them is the embarrassing runtime scaling and the accuracy that we have. 1/12 to the 12th power is really not so nice. So we think that a more careful analysis of our entire procedure can nail it down, but this is probably technical. Another thing that I like about this approach is that it is very robust towards inaccuracies. And so it is actually conceivable to try to implement something like that on a near-term device. But the problem here is that we try to speed up tractable optimization problems. So the classical algorithms, the general purpose solvers, scale poorly in dimension, but they scale polynomially. And so if n is 53, this is not a problem yet. So I think this would be more of a proof of principle. But because we start with algorithms that are classically tractable to begin with, this implementation would only solve a task that a classical computer cannot yet solve if we have more qubits or larger dimensions. And then you can actually, I think I'm very positive about that, you can actually improve the existing STP techniques that are out there with our new algorithm because it's much, much simpler and get some improvements there. And I'm also interested in adapting this meta algorithm to other important classes of convex optimization problems. Today I looked at binary optimization, but you could also look at semi-discrete matrix factorization or, for instance, quantum state tomography. And the take-home message I really want to convey, and you already helped me to do that, is quantum speedups for important optimization problems are really a new and exciting development. The first paper was only written 2 years ago, and there's a lot of room for improvement. Like, I showed you one strategy of how to implement Gibbs states on a quantum computer, but I'm really not an expert. And if you have a good intuition about physics, you might find problems that are first just mathematical optimization problems where you can use your detailed intuition about Gibbs state sampling to get much, much more tremendous improvements. Okay? And with this, I want to conclude and thank you very much for your attention.
Questions for our speaker? What are the epsilon factors in the classical algorithm?
They usually scale with 1 over epsilon to the 4 or 5. So, but for these fast kind of matrix multiplicative weights meta algorithms that scale very well in the dimension, the classical ones are also known to scale like a polynomial, but it's not 1 over epsilon to the 12. Whereas like more conventional interior point solvers that you will probably run if you use CVX, they only have a logarithmic dependence on the accuracy, but they really get storage overflow errors very quickly. And that's what makes them slow.
How adaptable is this to sort of a generic SDP problem where you have the constraint is x is positive C definite, and you're maximizing this?
Yeah.
More than one constraint, not necessarily trace being one.
Trace being one is not a dangerous constraint. I would dare say that almost any reasonable STP has a trace constraint, because you have the positive semi-definite constraint, and then the trace constraint is just a trace norm, and this just tells you that you're bounded.
Right.
If you don't have the trace constraint, chances are that you have an unbounded problem anyway, mm-hmm. and it's easy to write down the solution. Mm-hmm. But exactly, kind of like we looked at a special problem instance of Hamiltonian updates where we only had two very structured constraints, but the method is much, much more general. So you can just look at a problem that you like, look at the different convex sets, and what separating hyperplanes would look like, and then you could try to implement that as well. I think the entire strategy is very, very versatile.
I'm a little unclear about which hyperplanes are playing a role of getting you to a better objective, and which are getting you to or is that not the case at all because the objective is gone?
The objective is gone. You kind of trade the objective for an additional constraint, and it's always a half space constraint. And the original constraints will be there as well. And then you just need to implement maybe more than two separating hyperplanes. But the idea is the same.
And some of your constraints in sort of reformulated
yes.
Are inequality constraints?
Yes.
Some of them are equality constraints?
Yes.
That doesn't make a difference?
No, you can always write an equality constraint as two inequality constraints.
And are you doing that when you find the sort of hyperplanes?
Yes.
That's
Okay.
Okay.
So I think, like, we really worked hard to get, like, at least the algorithms part to convey that it is not so difficult and, like,
yeah.
to you, to physicists, because I think we're really now at a stage where you have to understand your Gibbs states. And this was the motivation for my talk, in order to hopefully get you there.
Do you feel like there are parts of either the classical or quantum algorithm which can be improved to be better scaling the dimension?
Yes, I think so.
Where's the most feasible place for it?
Look at different classes of optimization problems. Like look at problems where like the classical community that are important, the classical community hasn't figured out maybe an
option. I mean specific like increasing n to the 1.5 and n to the 2.
On the classical side, I would say it's here. Thanks, sorry. Here, where we kind of just truncate the Taylor series for matrix exponential in order to get a good Gibbs states approximation, there has to be smarter ways. Like even quantum Monte Carlo or something could help you there already. And for the quantum Gibbs state, I'm very happy that we found this route, but I'm pretty sure that there's others that are better.
Actually, about this, is the intuition that because the temperature is getting with the size, are you always guaranteed that you're away from like a phase transition?
You're questioning like my physics intuition now.
Okay.
Let's talk about that offline. But yes, the intuition is that like you're always in an easy region because it's always hot. That's as much as I want to say.
One question: did you compare? So you were solving the feasibility problem,
yes.
right? Which doesn't have a unique solution. It's just at the end,
yes.
say I
yes.
found this feasible
yes.
solution. So in principle, you could compare to solving a feasibility problem just with a regular SDP
yes.
method, right?
Yes.
And then you could say, oh, well, both would they give a very different solution? Did you look at that? I mean, now, then of course you can't implement the quantum.
Yes.
But you could still do that classically.
No. This is a very good point. This is something we want to look at in our follow-up project where we use these ideas to do quantum state tomography, because then I think the actual numerics are a bit more interesting.
Okay.
But very good point.
Yeah.
There are no further questions for us. Let's thank Richard.